This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition, and you're listening to today's podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When customers buy a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, they're choosing a company that has very publicly declared a social mission as part of its business model. You might remember the Peace Pop. Starting in the late 80s, the company said it would redirect money to go into what it called peace-promoting activities. The company highlighted fair trade in flavors like Rainforest Crunch. It sponsored Rock the Vote rallies, supported the Children's Defense Fund, worked to get recombinant bovine growth hormone out of the milk supply chain, scooped ice cream in Zuccotti Park for Occupy Wall Street protesters, and advocated for GMO labeling laws. But some critics of the company, right here in Vermont, where it was founded, say it hasn't lived up to its own ideals when it comes to local dairy workers and the Vermont landscape. They say the company is profiting off a social mission that looks good to consumers, but is not working in practice the way they'd like it to. Today on the program, we're going to talk with the company, which was sold to Unilever in 2000, and hear from some of those critics. I'm joined in the studio in Colchester by Rob Mihalik, Ben & Jerry's Global Director of Social Mission. Rob, nice to talk with you.
It's nice to be here, Jane. Thank you.
And in VPR's Norwich studio, we have Will Allen, co-founder of Regeneration Vermont, an education and advocacy group that's opposed to conventional dairy farming methods and works on encouraging regenerative agricultural practices. Will has been trying to get the company to change some of its practices for a few years now. Will, welcome to you. Nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Rob, just to help us frame this conversation, I'd love it if you could give us the overarching idea of what Ben & Jerry's social mission is. So I don't mean specific causes that you target, but more the philosophical approach to having a social mission.
So it's part of the three pillars that are in our mission statement. So, you know, product mission, economic mission, and social mission. And the idea is that the three missions need to work together. So that, you know, the social mission can't jeopardize the product mission, but the product mission can't jeopardize the social mission, vice versa. And so our work has been to see how all those three parts can uphold an overarching concept we have, which is a sustainable corporate concept to linked prosperity, which essentially means in our value chain that everybody's prospering in an equitable way.
Because I remember back from my childhood, part of the thing that Ben & Jerry's was often spoken about was that there was a ratio, and I don't remember exactly what it was, that the highest paid employee couldn't make a certain number of times what the lowest paid employee was making.
Right. Back when we were smaller, we did have a 5-to-1 ratio, which became 7-to-1. And eventually, we disbanded that and became one of the first companies to actually have a living wage. What we were trying to express was that everybody was important to the success of the company. So we were very early in establishing a living wage. And I might say, and people, I welcome people to check it out online, you know, we're a certified B Corp. And in our assessment, in the B Corp assessment, you can go to the B Corp website, you can see our assessment, and you will see that even still, Ben & Jerry's has one of the lowest ratios from top to bottom in the world. I mean, it rivals anything in Europe, but it totally is way under what you would see in any American company.
And B corporations, of course, are corporations where it social mission is actually part of the value of the company. And that's taken into account if a company, for example, has shareholders, that it's not just a profit margin that's the most important or the only thing that's taken into account for a company.
Right. Social purpose is equal to economic purpose in those cases.
Will, I'm going to come to you in just one second. But Rob, so in terms of the social mission, the overarching idea is linked prosperity, and everything sort of flows from that in terms of what causes you support and what you advocate for. Is this idea of linked prosperity the key one?
Right. And what programs we put into the business model. So, yes.
Will, you say Ben & Jerry's is not walking the walk when it comes to social responsibility, at least in certain areas. Why not?
Well, you know, like we're a fan of Ben & Jerry's and what they've done in Vermont and what they've done around the country, really. Like if you look at the grants that they give out, they're positive grants. We don't have any struggle with Ben & Jerry's social mission per se, because it helps Ben & Jerry's employees and it helps the broader community. We actually worked really closely with Ben & Jerry's during the whole GMO labeling struggle. They were an important ally of ours, and that is one of the reasons that we felt like, well, maybe we can have a dialogue with them about changing their supply chain. What we're mostly concerned about with Ben & Jerry's is what the supply chain that they have now does, not with their social mission, not with the grants they give, not with the concerts that they support, none of that. I mean, we think that that's wonderful. Our problem is that the structure of their company, the way it's set up right now, is they're buying a lot of cheap milk, and that cheap milk is the result of dairy worldwide being in crisis. There's too much conventional milk. There's not enough organic milk, but there's too much conventional milk, and that conventional milk is incredibly cheap. Well, that's good for Ben & Jerry's because then they get their butterfat milk cheaper, but it's not good for the community, and it hasn't been good for farm labor, hasn't been good for dairy cows. Dairy cows are badly abused on Vermont farms, and you know, we can pretend like Vermont is bucolic and everything, but the dairy system in Vermont is a nightmare.
But the dairy system is not Ben & Jerry's dairy system. It's the dairy system. So why do you think Ben & Jerry's has a responsibility to work from its position to change that?
Well, when you go to the store, you decide what you buy, right? Because you're spending the money. When Ben & Jerry's goes and looks for milk, they decide what they buy. Ben & Jerry's has almost complete control because they are the market. I mean, they can we actually worked for years with trying to change organic farms into growing organic cotton, and we tried to change corporations, and we were successful. We got Patagonia to switch over to organic cotton, and a lot of people feel like, well, you can't do that and it's an impossible thing to do. But in fact, it's not an impossible thing to do. We've got, 200 farms in Vermont that are organic right now. And we have the highest percentage of organic farms in the country. And so our argument really is that Ben & Jerry's is, it's supplying their ice cream factory from St. Albans Co-op, and that, and all of the analysis we've done on the milk from St. Albans Co-op, from labor abuse to animal abuse to high antibiotic use to high amounts of water pollution. I mean, all of those things are a direct result of St. Albans Co-op, and you say, well, Ben & Jerry's doesn't control that co-op, but they buy 35% of the milk that co-op produces. So if you're a customer that's buying 35%, you have a lot of say-so.
Rob Mihalik, what about it? I mean, your U.S. sales in 2016 were $465 million, right? Million dollars. So you have the buying power here. What about what Will is advocating for?
Well, we're very aligned. We've met with Will and Regeneration Vermont, and we've had different discussions. Actually, we've been meeting with a lot of different experts in the field looking at the dairy business and the dairy model. Now, one thing that I think is a bit of a misperception is that we've been passively not doing anything. We've actually been very proactive. We do have a program we call Caring Dairy. I think a lot of people misunderstand what that program is all about. The program addresses the entire ecosystem of the farm. So that's the animals, the people, the earth, and we look at all of it so that we can achieve some of the outcomes that, again, build soil health and water quality, animal welfare, dignified jobs for the farmers and the farm workers. And again, a misperception about dairy and how we purchase. We actually purchase components, and we purchase butterfat, which is the most expensive and profitable component for the dairy farmers. So that's really
important. That's what you purchase from the St. Albans Co-op?
Right. And so we're purchasing the most profitable component for the dairy farmers. But on top of that, we're investing in the farms that we're engaged with. So in the Caring Dairy program, we directly engage with 85 farms in Vermont. And Those farms, what we're asking those farms to do are to achieve certain standards in the program. So there's like a bronze, silver, and gold level. And as you move up the level, you actually get more premiums. So in 2016, we paid in direct premiums to farms above and beyond our raw material costs over $2.6 million in premiums that went directly to farmers.
What do they have to do to be a gold status?
Well, we're trying to achieve the best standards in terms of soil health and using regenerative agricultural practices, things like cover crops, crop rotations. You know, really what we want to see is a reduction in chemical use as well. And quite honestly, I mean, we're just starting to see results from 2016 to 2017. And one of the things that we can share with the listeners is that in 2016, we actually eliminated 2 million pounds of fertilizers from the Caring Dairy farms. And that's a significant amount of fertilizers, which will come in chemical form. So we're actually eliminating that. And we've seen an increase in practices such as cover cropping and crop rotations. And what that'll eventually do is it's going to make the soil more robust. And it's actually going to help in weed control, which will eventually, what we're looking for, is a reduction in herbicide use.
So, you know, organic practices and regenerative practices are not exactly equitable. But why not take the step and require at least organic butterfat?
So there are different factors when you get into the organic world. You've got to hit certain criteria, and there are going to be certain conversion costs. And we've been evaluating this. I mean, we're looking at everything's on the table. And one of the roles we think we can play is, you know, we have over 800 farms in Vermont. And as Will mentioned, there are about 200 that are organic, which means there are 600 that are not. And we see an important role to see what we can do to work with farms to build a model that can help them get to regenerative practices. You know, a lot of these farms are not going to go organic. And as a matter of fact, we don't have the infrastructure in Vermont to be able to convert all of those farms to organic. We can debate how many could, but, you know, you've got 200 already, and the Vermont infrastructure may be able to support 100 more, maybe 200 if we stretch it, which would mean we'd have 400 farms, you know, out in the cold. So,
but they don't have to be selling to Ben and Jerry's. I mean, if you go and say these are our requirements, you're such a big player in the market, isn't the argument that they will have to convert because it will be in their own business interests to supply you. And if you say these are our requirements, they'll do it.
Well, right now, our evaluations are that we wouldn't be able to get the organic supply in Vermont, which would mean we'd be, you know, turning our backs on some Vermont farmers that we don't want to do. We've been working with Vermont farmers ever since we started. We've had a formal relationship with the St. Albans Cooperative since 1985 when we built the Waterbury plant. And so we want to be able to figure out how can all Vermont dairy farmers succeed, but we need to achieve the results that we're looking for. And that means soil health, animal welfare, and then dignified work for the people involved.
Will?
Well, let me just respond to that a little bit. You know, when one of our strategies when we've been talking to Ben and Jerry's is to try to get them to see that they don't have to switch over everything all at once. What if they just switched Ben Terry Garcia ice cream as their first attempt? We did the same thing when we got companies to switch over to cotton. When we got Patagonia to switch over, in the first year they've switched about 10% of their supply chain. In 5 years, they were able to switch all of it. Same thing happened with Esprit, and the same thing happened with Nike. And Nike started out with 3% and then went to 10% and then went to 15% and then went to 20%. And this is the same way Ben and Jerry's could do it. They don't need to have all organic ice cream the first year. That's unrealistic. And about a supply chain, they get milk now from dairies in Nevada and California and Utah, and they're buying milk in Europe. You know, this is an international brand, and it's a little bit misleading to think that they're only a $470 million company. They're a $1.4 billion company worldwide.
Sure. But in terms of the Vermont, I mean, it sounds like what Rob is saying is that they're working towards what you've just said your goals are. And so when you say they don't have to go all organic all at once, you know, if we take the organic requirement out, what Rob is saying is that, you know, those three tiers are leading to more regenerative practices, including reducing pesticides and having better soil management. Isn't that what you say you want?
That is exactly what we want. The big problem is how fast are you going to do this? Are you going to is Caring Dairy now has been going for several years, and its actual success record is not that great. I mean, one of the reasons that people are growing cover crops now is because they're required to grow cover crops on the required agricultural practices that was passed by the legislature. So Caring Dairy could be helpful, but it's like a slow-motion machine. I mean, we have some of the worst water pollution in Lake Champlain of any of the big lakes in the country, right? And that is 70% of that in northern Lake Champlain is dairy, and 40% of it statewide is dairy, right? And so that pollution is not going to stop if you switch to GMO corn, if you do a gradual Caring Dairy. You know, I'm glad that you're doing Caring Dairy, you know, and I've said this several times to the Ben & Jerry's people, but it is not making much of an impact. I mean, you can pretend like it is, but it isn't. I mean, we've been to these dairies. I don't know if the people in Ben & Jerry's, and in fact, I've talked to some of them who are social mission people who have never been to the dairies. If you go to some of these dairies and you see what's going on, we filed FOIA requests to get all of the antibiotic records on antibiotics in milk. And the antibiotic level in milk in this state is incredibly high. And a lot of people don't realize is that dairy is burning out cows so fast that by the time the cow is 5 years old, it's done. It's exhausted. It's spent. And so what's happened is now 57% of our beef in this country comes from dairy cows. And, you know, Ben & Jerry's can say, well, we're trying to do all of these great things. And I think that they are trying to do these great things, but they're not enough. I mean, things are out of control in terms of water pollution, in terms of labor abuse, in terms of animal abuse. I mean, you see these – a lot of these animals are so depressed that like 1% of all the dairy cows in this country die of depression. You can imagine what the vet – says when he comes there and looks at that cow, because you can see depression in the cow. They're listless and worthless, right? And this is the problem. Here we are pretending like, oh, we're producing this great product and doing all these wonderful things, but it's trashing Vermont. I mean, it's trashing our brand and it's trashing our environment. And it's, you know, it's giving us a bad name.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about Ben & Jerry's, its social mission, its profit margins, and how it balances those two things, as well as how it responds to criticisms about its practices here in Vermont. We're talking with Will Allen, who's co-founder of Regeneration Vermont, which is an education and advocacy group that works on regenerative agricultural practices, and with Rob Mihalik, Ben & Jerry's Global Director of Social Mission. I want to get into some calls and listener comments, but Rob, I wanted you to respond to what Will Allen said just before the break. You know, he put a really fine point on it. He said, you're part of the problem trashing Vermont's landscape.
We actually think we're part of the solution. And I know that's depending on which way you look at it. You know, the program that we're dealing with, we're dealing directly with 85 farms. So we're directly engaged. And what we're trying to do is build a model that can be replicable. Now, where I will agree with Will, and actually we are aligned on so many aspects of this discussion, you know, can we move faster? Yes, we can. And as a matter of fact, the results are accelerating. I mean, part of our program was to systematically put these things in place. And as these practices take hold, they start to accelerate the results. And that's what we're starting to see now. But it doesn't mean we're done here. We know that we must continue to raise the bar in all these things. And I know our team and all of the people at Ben & Jerry's, that's the way we work every day. We come in and we say, all right, that was yesterday. What can we do better tomorrow? And this program, the Caring Dairy program, you know, has been not only providing, you know, some of the details that we've been talking about, but we've been hiring veterinarians to go in and, you know, deal with the animals. You know, we have been working, we'll get to it, on farm worker aspects of the program. So we're looking at the whole ecosystem. We see the urgency as well. We want to have great results on these farms and be able to have a model that can be either replicated and or, in some cases, this becomes a great bridge to transition to organic. We've had that happen with a Caring Dairy farm because now they're moving much closer to those standards. So there is a win-win here, and there are solutions being created here that I think are important for people to understand. Also, I think it's really – we need to be careful about numbers. I'm not sure where $1.4 billion came from, but – man, if we were making that much money, that would be pretty good. So,
well, I think the numbers that I saw were about $465 million in U.S. sales. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you are a global company.
And I think Will was citing a global sale number, which I don't know where it came from. But I just want to make sure that we have accurate numbers, and that one's not accurate. So,
one number that I do want to ask you about, is the price point and the tipping point for the cost of a pint. Because, you know, you're a company, so you have to sell the ice cream in order to do any of what we're talking about. And at what point, I mean, how much can you keep charging? Can you go organic and charge more? Consumers, we know, will pay more for organic products. And we know that consumers have paid a lot for Ben & Jerry's. They value the social mission. They value that it's super premium ice cream. So, you know, could you charge more and basically put that money back into making some of these practices work? We have listeners who are advocating for, have an organic line, we'll pay for it.
Well, and that's always a consideration in terms of just where is the price point where people will, you know, stop purchasing it. And we're investing, you know, just to remind people, we're investing in Vermont Dairy, but we're also investing in a supply chain that includes sugar, cocoa, banana, vanilla, you know, fruits and nuts from around the world. And we're investing in a fair trade certified supply chain where we're also doing, you know, climate mitigation and adaptation procedures, which we're also doing on Vermont Dairy Farms as well. So we're investing a lot in our supply chain and looking to see the results that, you know, I think we're all really looking for.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hello. I guess my question would be to Will in terms of how I understand what they're trying to do in addressing perceived or actual practices at Ben & Jerry's, but a lot of his comments have been about agricultural practices, and it seems like why isn't there a more concerted effort or a more publicized effort to address those issues in the agricultural community, and not just exposing the practices, but leading people in a direction so they can maintain their you know viability as farms. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that there were over 2,000 farms in Vermont, and now there's 800. I guess my question would be, you know, this is a balance, and the balance is very fragile. And Ben & Jerry's is a luxury item as far as I'm concerned. So
are you saying that Regeneration Vermont and Migrant Justice shouldn't be going after is a pejorative way to phrase it, but shouldn't be trying to push Ben & Jerry's in more sustainable directions? Or are you saying something else?
But what I if the abuses are in the agricultural community with the animals and the workers and all that sort of stuff, then what's the roadmap for getting out of that?
Yeah, Will Allen, what is the strategy here, and what is to John's point, the strategy for really targeting the producers?
Well, right now the price of milk has hovered over the last year between about $14 and $16 a hundredweight, and that's like 11.6 gallons of milk. So farmers right now are actually paying Ben & Jerry's to take their milk. I mean, they're losing money on every single gallon of milk because it costs $22 to produce the milk. That's cost of production. And if you're only getting $14 to $16 for it, I mean – you know, it doesn't take rocket science to figure out these folks are losing a lot of money. And so the issue is that, first of all, farmers aren't making very much money on conventional milk. And then organic milk, you make pretty good money. I mean, where the price is $14 to $16 for conventional milk, right now it's $35 to $45 for organic milk, right? And so the issue is, like, farmers are actually downsizing. And this speaks to a whole nother issue of Vermont. Vermont has probably the worst agricultural system in the States because it's so off balance. 72%, you know, more or less of, you know, our agriculture is devoted to milk, right?
Right, some but to John's say as specific high as 80%. Question, Will, I mean, Will is John is saying, look, go after where the problem is, not the company that has a social mission that's trying to advocate for more, even if they're not perfect. What's the strategy for working with the producers to change this?
So the strategy is like you know, and we've worked with a lot of the consultants that are helping out in dairy, Sarah Flack and Lisa McCrory. And their strategy is to try to help the dairy farmer downsize. There's too much conventional milk. There's a glut of it, and the price is low. There's not enough organic milk, so they're trying to help farmers convert to organic where they can be profitable. And that is the strategy. But in order to have those farmers come out the other side, there has to be a market for that organic milk. And the market has been closed off because the organic milk industry has been bought by Danone. Danone just bought a huge amount of the organic milk industry in the United States, and they've stopped taking new farmers on. So our strategy was to try to go to Ben & Jerry's and create that market that will be a draw for those farmers. Right now, if you're a farmer and you want to get a Chapter 12, which is a reorganization bankruptcy protection, which was passed by the Farm Bill, you can't get it for conventional milk. You can only get it for organic milk because you can't pencil out for conventional milk right now. It's you know, nobody sees a future for conventional milk. So here we are in Vermont. 5% of our non-milk food comes from Vermont. 95% of our non-milk food comes from out of state. And here we are providing 67% of all the milk in New England. So, you know, clearly we've got too much milk coming out of Vermont and we don't have enough other food coming into Vermont. Our strategy is like convert some of this dairy land. We have 1 million acres in Vermont devoted to dairy. Convert some of that dairy land, because you don't need so much if you don't need so much milk, into other kinds of farms. This isn't 1950 where you can only grow 6 months a year in Vermont. I mean, we have technology now where we're growing year-round.
So let me toss this back to Rob. But before we do, Theodore is calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Theodore. Go right ahead.
Hey there. I'd like to know just what Ben and Jerry's concrete plans are for not just talking the talk, but walking the walk and really making improvements here. And I'm just really frustrated with the lack of leadership we're seeing from our biggest business and from our statewide leadership. We're so Scott on this issue. The clock is ticking. We need real leadership. I'm excited that clean water advocate James Ellers has put his hat in for governor. And I think it's time that we look to see real leaders take real concrete steps on this critical issue so that we're not just going to keep exploding our state and that we tackle this head on.
Theodore, thanks for your call. And Jennifer in Wallingford, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because I was a longtime supporter of Ben & Jerry's, but you've lost some of my support for a couple of reasons. I think abandoning the 5-to-1 corporate earnings ratio was an enormous mistake and a loss in national leadership. I think the failure to have an all-organic line is not only detrimental to our environment in Vermont, but to our health here and to the health of all of your consumers. And finally, I think Ben and Jerry should be taking a leadership role in protecting the immigrant rights of immigrant migrant workers who help support the Vermont dairy industry and keep it running.
Jennifer, thanks for your comments. Rob Mihalik, you can respond to all of that whole roundup there.
So, again, in summary, when we look at the results from the Caring Dairy Program, where we're, you know, eliminating 2 million pounds of fertilizers from, you know, the Vermont landscape, and we're reducing herbicide use, we're increasing regenerative practices to make the soil robust. We've got veterinarians checking in on the animals. The animals that the farmers are changing the bedding practices so they're more comfortable. There are also better labor standards on the 85 farms that we've been working with, and we can get to that because, you know, Milk with Dignity and Migrant Justice is a very important program we've been working with to achieve constructive conclusion.
And yet, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah. you haven't signed the Milk with Dignity Compact?
Not yet, but we're getting close. And the thing is we're investing millions of dollars in Vermont dairy. And we're investing millions of dollars in reducing the carbon footprint in the agricultural supply chain. That's leadership. There isn't any other company that I know of in maybe the world, but definitely in the country, that is taking the leadership and investment, significant investment of millions of dollars, to actually achieve better outcomes and results. So I would just say that I don't agree that we're not taking leadership and that we're not getting results. We are.
You know, when you're a company with a social mission, you in some ways make yourself a target by having a social mission at all, because then people can say that, you know, you're not going far enough, or you say you're doing this, but here's what I'm seeing. And, you know, I am sensitive to that critique, but also if you're an ice cream manufacturer, shouldn't dairy be perhaps the one place where you can be almost immune to criticism, where really you are doing the most in the social mission, since it is the foundation of the whole business?
Well, we think we are. And I think what we need to do is we need to do a better job of reporting out so people can actually see the detail of what's going on in those programs. And to speak to some of the other issues from the callers, we are very active in terms of better policy in terms of immigration. We've been very much involved with reaching out to our congressional delegation. We want to see better immigration policy, and we've been a strong advocate of it. Actually, Ben and Jerry's is a registered lobbyist in Washington. We have a social mission activism manager who goes down and lobbies. So we are not passive. We are very proactive in all of this. We can't tell all these stories all the time, because then we'll get criticized for, you know, bragging about our social mission, which we don't want to do. We want to be actually doing things and be, you know, active in that regard.
Let me ask you about immigration. First, we got a note from Ra, who says, while I appreciate and applaud Ben and Jerry's work towards making dairies healthier and more sustainable, I would start buying their products if they were organic. Caitlin in Middlebury says, I've been really disappointed with how slowly they are acting to make good on their promise to take up the Milk with Dignity standards. Mm-hmm. Now, the advocacy group Migrant Justice here in Vermont launched a campaign a couple years ago called Milk with Dignity. And in their words, that campaign is to, quote, call on major food corporations to take responsibility for farm workers' rights abuses in their supply chains. They've specifically targeted Ben & Jerry's, a big company. They say you're not doing it. You've been working with them over the years, but they say they're frustrated mm-hmm. that you have not signed the compact, which includes things like farm worker education, a farm worker authored code of conduct, and third party monitoring. Now, you just said, Rob, that you're still working on that and maybe close to signing it, but what has prevented Ben & Jerry's from signing that?
Well, I think we're very close. And due to a confidentiality agreement that we have with Migrant Justice, I can't go into details, but I do want to put a little bit of a perspective on this, because I know there's a public narrative that, you know, Ben & Jerry's has been kicking the can down the road for 2 years. And people need to understand that in June of 2015, when we signed an agreement of cooperation, that was a public statement that we're going to figure out how to implement a worker-designed and worker-led labor program within our dairy supply chain. We're still committed to that. But what people need to understand, in June of 2015, there actually was no program. There was no program guide. There was nothing that we could bring to farmers and say, okay, well, this is how the program works. We received the first draft that we were able to review in March of 2016. Now, that was a draft of a program. And from our perspective, and we were trying to come with all the best intentions, our perspective, that first draft was an incredibly complex and costly program. And what we were trying to get across is, like, can we provide input that might be helpful to the workers who are designing this program, where there might be some adjustments made over time, so that we can get to a program that you can actually implement and successfully scale? So that's been our perspective. It's not been that we're delaying. As a matter of fact, we have never left the table. We've been at the table discussing the details, and we've gone back and forth. And to Migrant Justice's credit, too, they have a very committed team. They've been leaning in all the way.
And they're small compared to Ben and Jerry's.
And as we know in this discussion, dairy is a very complicated agricultural system, and we're trying to achieve something that can be implemented and replicated and scaled over time.
Will Allen, what would success look like to you? What would get you to the point where you say, we think Ben & Jerry's is doing exactly the right thing, with the caveat that, you know, you may not ever get there, and that may not be Ben & Jerry's shared goal with you. But what does success look like to you?
Well, Jane, you know, we're farmers. And so, I mean, as farmers, you know, just like ice cream makers, they're probably protective of each other. Maybe Haagen-Dazs and Ben & Jerry's hang out together. I don't know that, but we hang out together as farmers, and we see a lot of our farm brethren going bankrupt, and a lot of them are dairy, right? Cabot, for example, is losing about 10% of their farmers a month. You know, they have 1,500 farmers, but that's still a lot of farmers to lose, and their argument is, they're mostly small dairies, right? And that's the same thing with our dairies. Now, right now, like we don't have cows out on pasture. We have cows locked up on concrete. We have, you know, our cows are concrete grazers. They never get out on grass after their replacement heifers. When they come in and they're bred, they're on concrete for the rest of their life until they go to the feedlot or to the slaughterhouse.
But, Will, we're short on time. What are your specifics? What do you really
want? So my argument is, like, we have to change the way we're doing dairy. And, like, it doesn't have to be all at once. A victory would be Ben & Jerry's saying, look, we're going to start converting certain flavors over to organic. Maybe some of these flavors that people have just found have high levels of glyphosate in them, right? Start there. Start fixing stuff that's broken. Your labor is broken. Your treatment of cows is broken. Your water pollution is broken. You know, like, this is a system that, you know, if anybody's looking at it from the outside, can see that it's a problem. And all of the stuff that we've done is shown what the problems are with Ben & Jerry's and trying to help them make a transition to, you know, a system that does have some kind of dignity in it, because right now their whole system has no dignity.
Well, Will Allen is co-founder of Regeneration Vermont. Rob Mihalik is Ben & Jerry's Global Director of Social Mission. What I appreciate about this conversation is if you're going to be a company with a social mission, you always have to have people who are pushing you to be better. And I appreciate both of you coming to the table today to have this conversation on air. Rob and Will, thank you very much, both of you.
Thanks for asking me.